Hey, everybody. Happy Friday. This is Trevin McGee at the Scene Stealers podcast again.
Now it feels like we've started.
No, that's the way you start a podcast.
Well, now you got to sing the theme song.
Oblivion.
There you go.
That's what we're reviewing today. I'm here again with my friends Trey Hawk, Eric Moline, and special guest Alan Rapp. And we've got one movie to talk about this week, and that would be...
Oblivion.
Yes. So we're going to talk about Oblivion, the latest from director Joseph Kosinski.
Is that what we're saying now? The latest from this director, the auteur, Joseph Kosinski?
Do we
put his name in front of the titles?
It is prominently featured already.
Yeah.
So, okay. Joseph Kosinski.
Yeah.
His second film after Tron Legacy, another film that I'm sure everyone at this table loved. And
at least one of us did.
Yeah.
Is that you?
No, you've got a poster of it right behind your damn...
That's Aaron's poster. It's not mine.
Yeah. Anyway, so we've got Oblivion and nothing else, but very right off the bat, we want to do our one thing.
We want to hear from you, the podcast listeners. And so if you could leave us comments on the Scene Stealers page, go to the podcast section and you'll see all the archived podcasts and you can comment on this one and ask us questions or tell us, you know, what's going on. Mm-hmm. And anything you want us to talk about or a question you have or a comment you have about today's podcast, and we'll include it in next week's podcast. As well, we're going to start using some of the awesome interviews that we've been doing, mostly Trey, the last couple. Harmony Korine and Danny Boyle, Rosario Dawson and Vincent Castle are going to be podcast
extras. You got all those guys in one room? That's awesome.
Yeah. All of them in one room.
Took one phone call. It's the Trey Hawk
bump. Amazing. Okay. Alan, do you have a one thing? Is there one thing this week that you're
can
really excited about coming up?
Is there
up
one thing you're happy about right now?
No, I'm not happy about anything.
No.
All right.
It's too bad.
I've got one.
I bet you I know what it is.
I've got one.
I'm excited about it, too.
I am, too. So there's Middle of the Map coming up.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be my one thing for next week. One thing for this week. No, actually, it's 2 weeks. God dang it. Middle of the Map is coming up.
Middle of the Map's coming up.
But my one thing is Total Recall this weekend, Saturday, 3 p.m., Alamo Draft House.
With Colin Farrell?
It is the only Total Recall worth uttering.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I would
definitely agree.
Yeah.
Paul Verhoeven.
Yes.
Which you
vintage
know what?
Sci-fi awesomeness.
With the movie we're about to talk about, that's a nice little segue.
Oh, I think it's... But you get to see Total Recall on the big screen, 3 p.m., Alamo Draft House. That's my one thing.
That's a
super
good,
exciting.
That's a good one thing.
That's a great
one. I'm really... Yeah, that's a great
one. What's your one thing, Trevor?
My one thing's got to be the Repo Man criterion. I really want it. I want it. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to watch it. I'm excited for it. But I'm going to hold off because a little birdie told me that it's coming up.
May 11th.
Yeah.
We're going to show it for...
So,
what?
For
Alex Cox's nice. Repo Man is going to be in theaters. Alamo, do you know yet if it'll be a 35mm?
I don't yet. That's too far out.
Well,
yeah, that's...
if it happens to not be a 35mm print, they just released a stunning 2K transfer on Criterion DVD and Blu-ray. So that is my one thing for this week.
Sweet.
Now, let's talk about Oblivion. The latest from director, auteur, writer, editor.
Is he the writer on this, too?
No. Well, he wrote the graphic novel that the screenplay, the story was...
Are you serious?
Yeah. It said it in the credits.
So, Kosinski. Is that how you say
Joseph
it?
Joseph Kosinski.
Why did he get put on Tron Legacy? What was his relationship to that?
I don't know, frankly. I think it was a recommendation, because he had a history of... Like, he was a music video director before.
That movie certainly felt like a music video.
Yeah.
And so Oblivion, he proves himself with proves himself in quotations at the box office, right? With a known entity, and then they give him a project
little,
of his own.
A little room to
it.
Breathe. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so this comes from his graphic novel,
mm-hmm.
and then a bunch of dudes helped him adapt it into a movie.
Yeah. That's the short of it. And really, I mean, the key, the linchpin in the whole thing is getting Tom Cruise involved.
Right,
you get him to say he wants to do something. He produced it, starred in it,
and a pretty in control Tom Cruise. This isn't the crazy Tom Cruise. This is the
Tom Cruise.
Well, what was the last thing you saw him in? Rock of Ages, or
well, yeah, certainly that was a parody, kind of over the top parody.
But it seems like a lot of his recent roles, Night and Day. It seems like a lot of his recent roles have been more the crazy. version of himself.
Here's how I want to start this review from my standpoint is Tom Cruise usually, because he takes on the producer mantle and gets heavily involved in the production, has, as far as mainstream summer blockbusters go, and movies that just work at least on a level of entertainment, he usually has a really great quality control. Yeah. He is one of our most reliable movie stars because he gets involved in the production and he's smart about storytelling.
He's also in the place where he can pick whatever he wants to do.
Even Jack Reacher, as trashy as it was,
and the longer it's gone since I've seen that, like I'm actually, like I'm looking forward to watching that again.
Yeah.
The longer I've gone since I watched it, the more I like want to revisit it because I think it'll play better on a smaller screen and. I think the jokes will hit better, and you know, like I'm actually looking forward to seeing that again.
So that's why this movie surprised me because it felt like the first.
You said surprised B.
Yeah, surprised B. The first
surprised B me
drunk.
Well, it's not
35 or 40 minutes. I thought were really compelling. And
do you want to try and give a little plot synopsis?
I'll try
just a little bit.
It seemed like the movie was going to be about something besides its plot. Like there was going to be something going on with the characters, and the characters were interesting because you have this guy who is at the end of the world. He's in charge of making sure that all the drones on the planet,
which are little robot balls with guns on them.
Little robot Wallies are making sure that the planet is safe for them to run their machines on, and that the scavs, who are the
alien menace,
don't stop the big project that they're trying to do. And it's very limited and it's very mysterious. And there's a couple really dumb plot devices, like this mandatory memory wipe that he refers to as something that that is just there. It's not necessarily bad. He doesn't question it.
I think it's the first line of the movie. It's been 5 years since the mandatory memory wipe.
Yeah.
And then it's glossed over very quickly.
So from a plot standpoint.
And then I could feel the hairs on the back of Trey's neck stand up at that.
Yeah. There's a bunch of really
dumb. And it was delivered in voiceover, which is another just Trey Rock. There's
a bunch of really just dumb devices in this, plot devices in this movie and plot holes. I had lunch with Alan and we were talking about knowing what we know at the end, going back through the beginning and seeing if it all makes sense.
It doesn't.
No, the timeline doesn't work out.
But there was something uniquely compelling about his character because he was stuck in this little world high atop the earth with one woman.
Yeah.
And their relationship was not defined.
Because it tells you very on that they are a couple, but they weren't a couple that chose each other. They were placed together in this facility.
So there's all these motivations that you don't know what her motivation is, but it's mysterious, kind of, because Tom Cruise is having these flashbacks that are really obvious that give away Olga Kuryenko's character from the first time we see her.
Oh, yeah.
Can I say real quick, why is she in movies?
She's pretty.
I guess. Is that
I don't
it?
Know. I haven't seen To the Wonder yet. I thought she was just fine in the Bond movie.
Yeah, I guess.
And she was just fine in the Bond movie Seven Psychopaths. But
she is in that.
So here's the deal.
But she's always a side character.
Yeah, and she always gets killed in a hurry, except for this movie.
So what I'm trying to say is that once the big reveals start to happen and we start to realize that Morgan Freeman is in this movie and other people are in this movie, even though the previews have already given most of this away, it comes as so little of a surprise that you're almost wishing that the plot would have been more about the characters and gone in an exploration of, you know, what it's like to be manipulated and how memory plays into that, because those things are really interesting. And then instead,
genetic
what it
memory
does,
or inherited memory. Yeah. I mean, it makes more sense when you see the movie, but the fact that he's, you know,
that's the problem with this film is that this film is a film that is plotted and never spends any time with any of the sort of emotional content of these characters or psychology.
It does a little.
It glosses it, though. Well, but that's the thing, is that this is a person whose fundamental ideology, based on the world that he is interacting with, shifts and changes within the scope of, a lot within the scope of the film. And he doesn't suffer any sort of rupture or break.
It just becomes another movie about saving the world.
Exactly.
Right.
He's like, really okay. Well, I was lied to for the entire course of my existence. I guess I'll move on from that.
And I don't feel like this is a spoiler alert, by
the way. Put this,
aside.
Yeah.
We know there's a big secret.
So. Yeah, we know that there's a big secret.
We're not
going to
reveal
not,
that here.
I'm going
which,
to.
Right.
Which is revealed
at some
to him.
Point, but not yet.
which is revealed to him by a black man in sunglasses in a dark room who gives him the blue pill instead of the red pill.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Alan pointed this out to me over lunch. There's about six different movies that this movie's stealing from.
Oh, yeah.
And that's not – I mean, I like District 9. There's about five or six different movies that movie's stealing from as well. But it works. This one doesn't. And after the first 45 minutes are up, these things, you start to notice them more maybe because you're looking for something else, honestly.
That's the thing is this movie doesn't have a message. It's a sci-fi movie that doesn't have a message at the end. You get to the end and you're like –
It's not about anything.
No, it's just an action.
What are you guys
movie.
Talking about?
No,
don't
no,
you
no,
know
that
the soul?
Yeah, love makes souls.
Soul is the love that you share. Don't you guys know that?
Yeah, the love stuff
makes
he says
souls.
At the end of the movie.
Yeah,
love
that's,
makes
that's
souls.
Fuck you, Sally.
There's a line in the movie that is literally, if we have a soul, it's made up of the love we share.
Yeah,
that's what he says.
Yeah.
He should, what did he, like, take Terrence Malick's leftover
narration? Yeah. Stuff Terrence Malick
I did start
wrote,
thinking
like, oh,
of Thin Red
terrible.
Line at the end of that
this
movie.
Is terrible.
Yeah. But at least in Thin Red Line, when you're swallowing the pretentious bullshit poetry, you're going, this is really good pretentious bullshit poetry, and it goes with this movie. That's a really good point. And I think
that love
the
is the soul. that is a good
we
point.
Need
that's no, that's good.
Let's
hey,
all get
we
that
can all
tattooed,
just,
guys. Let's
why
just,
can't we just?
I'm looking forward to reading Trevin's print review. Maybe you could highlight some of the best quotes from the film.
Oh, in fact, that's all it should be. Not comparable quotes from Oblivion.
And so when the movie decides that it's just going to be an action picture, I think is in this scene where
does it decide that?
It decides that at one point, yeah, because it seems like at a moment where
it definitely defaults.
Yeah, they're definitely
when it runs out of stuff to do.
There's a moment where they might be able to do something different with the script. And if this was the man who fell to the earth or something like that, or even Moon, we were talking about Moon today.
Yeah. But
it would have more intellectual or more interesting characters.
But it does. We were talking about the vampire movie earlier at lunch with Will Smith.
Oh, even I Am Legend.
Blade?
Yeah.
And that movie has the same problem. Yeah.
Were you guys talking about Blade?
I Am Legend completely turns into an action movie abandons its premise.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's really the biggest problem with this movie. And in addition to that,
it looks great, though.
The people that it does, but the people that we're supposed to care about are the hardest people to care about ever because they dwell in caves. They don't speak. When they do, they look haggard and pissed
off.
They're
dirty.
They wear capes.
They all wear capes, and they look like they're all wearing like shitty predator costumes.
And the guy from
Game
of Thrones
has one
line.
I can't feel for somebody if they're dirty.
No, but I'm just saying.
I can't. Is that just me?
They also are all keeping secrets from each other, and they're not letting you in on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
The plot.
I still stand by my assertion that there is so little emotional content within any of these characters that it's hard to care about anybody. Yeah. In fact, the one who I think does the most with her very limited character is the redhead.
Yep. What's her name? Yeah.
I don't know.
She
plays a character, Vika. She's very compelling, and she's one of the characters we really shouldn't like.
Although the film makes a lot of easy choices throughout, and the way they marshal her character out of the movie is one of the cheapest choices.
Oh,
they
I
make.
Totally get it, but that's a plotting choice. I'm just saying
that actress
with that character covers a huge amount of ground,
more
than she deserves
more.
To.
And here's another thing. The reason that she's so compelling in this movie is because she is one of the only characters whose entire existence is not explained.
Yeah.
By the end of the
real
film...
Real quick, her name
they,
is Andrea Riseborough.
She did a great job. Yeah. And by the end of the film, there's so much stuff explained away. And stuff that didn't need to be explained. Stuff that we already knew. Just from watching it, we could feel what was right.
By the time you get that 10-minute flashback in the last 20 minutes
of the movie. Of course, we know exactly what's going
on
with that character. He also plotted away. And we know why what's going on is what's going on. We know why that they were put together.
Yeah,
also.
We've been able to figure that out
of
without
course.
Being told.
Yeah.
I still like that flashback.
I think we were still
126
minutes. I still like that flashback.
Oh, I do too.
It could have been
90.
You could have easily cut out 40 minutes of this movie.
Yeah, I agree.
How long was the runtime?
126.
Oh, you could easily cut out at least 126. I think it would be easy. Cut it down to a 3 minute. Yeah, cut it down. Actually, 123. This would have been an amazing music video. It would have been really incredible.
Let's talk about this.
No, wait. Since you mentioned music, let's talk about the score for a second.
After we talk about the score, we have to talk about the IMAX.
Oh, do we?
Yeah.
Because this score has horrible. This has the score that, in some places, it's almost the Inception score, where it's just loud and right in front of you and say, hey, this scene is important. Watch.
It's got heavy-osity.
But it's on top of a scene that doesn't do anything. It's just a guy standing there. It's just, yeah. You know, it's... That stuff like that bothers me.
The score was really interesting.
The way it's
really
used, because that's the thing, is that, that's kind of neither here nor there as far as, like, whether you like that music or you don't like that music. I think that music's fine, but the way it's employed in the
way
film,
it's employed is that, hey, this is important, even though it's not.
Absolutely agree. It's totally overt. It's totally forceful.
Alan, I listened to the Flaming Lips' new album, The Terror, on the way home from the movie last night, and I was thinking to myself, this would have been a 100% better soundtrack to that movie. It would have made it spookier and scarier. And
it's a soundtrack they should use if they remake Barbarella. It's like perfect for that.
They are remaking Barbarella, I think, aren't they?
I think so. I don't know if it got canceled.
That's
not.
Been in talks forever. Yeah. At one point, Robert Rodriguez was going to do it. At one point back in the 90s, Drew Barrymore was going to do it. That's people have been talking about remaking.
Drew Barrymore was going to be Barbarella? Or was going to be Barbarella.
So Kaczynski has a flair for sleek.
2001.
I think the art direction in this. I think two things. Actually, three things I really liked about this movie. I thought Claudio Miranda's cinematography was great. You know, he can shoot fake environments really well. He proved that with Life of Pi and everything. Like, you know, I thought the cinematography. I thought the art direction was really well done. And just
the visual color palette that makes up Claudio Miranda as a human being. Is reflected in this. He understands this.
There's a lot of white.
He's
and
a pale
silver.
Man with long white hair.
There's a lot of white and silver, rounded edges.
Well, it very much looks like a movie from someone who loves Macs. I mean, it has that kind of
Macs,
Apple computers.
Yeah. I mean, it has that kind of rounded white kind of look to every piece of technology that you see.
Yeah.
Because when dirt gets on white, you can't see it, so it's a good choice.
Yeah. No, I really like the attention to detail in terms of just the sets and the placements. And the only thing that I really thought kind of fell short was the big stupid platform, whatever they call it, the big
triangle. Yeah.
The space triangle.
Yeah. The Tet.
Okay. Yeah, I thought that was the Tet. I thought that was stupid, and out what really goes on in there, I thought that was even dumber.
So what was the third thing you liked?
I liked
Hoosier Teeth?
No, I liked the Hoosier Teeth. Why do you do that? And you know, I liked it in IMAX. I think I'm alone here, but I liked it.
No,
in
IMAX.
In terms of the visual, I mean,
I was happy to have seen
it. I thought it was
a
very visually appealing.
Yeah,
film.
Because it was at least you had that too.
Even
though there's no personal connection or the characters and plot are very repeated and rudimentary, like it's a well put together film. I mean, the way that it shot, or the way you mentioned earlier in the art direction, you were able to predict one of the big sort of surprises.
Eric
of the movie.
Made fun of me for it.
I know, but just like the attention to detail here, that wasn't an accident, and That shows me that there's a filmmaker there who can put together a strong visual element.
And he should have trusted his audience more.
Yeah.
He didn't have to spoon-feed his
everything. I wonder what got lost in the translation to English. Like, if the comic book was an English translation comic book or was an English language comic book.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's an American.
Is he?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
He seems like an Eastern European, kind of with his aesthetic and stuff like that. So that surprises me.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I watched a couple interviews with him during that whole Tron.
I didn't know you were
thing.
A racist.
No, I mean,
he also doesn't like dirty.
He's not a race. Yeah.
No, I'm.
He doesn't like dirty Eastern Europeans.
I am fine with dirty people. I feel emotionally for dirty people.
Me.
You guys were the ones that said you can't feel for them if they're dirty.
Don't put
your words in my mouth.
So why is Joseph Kaczynski dirty?
He's not.
This podcast has gone off the rails.
Yeah, it has. I mean, and it's because this film is not great.
Yeah, it's hard to stay focused on a film that's
Because otherwise you'd cry.
It's hard to stay focused on a film that's all over the place.
but I will say, for as flawed as this movie is, it never totally lost me. I mean, there's enough there that kind of kept my interest. I got bored, but I was never looking at my watch and ready to, you know, run out of the theater. Like, I'd been in a lot of screenings.
Yeah.
This is a minor rock fist down for sure, but there was that moment, and it was, for me, it was a very specific moment where I realized that what I thought was interesting about the movie was not what the filmmaker thought was interesting about the movie. And when I saw where it was going, I got really disappointed, and I did kind of get out of the game.
And Tom Cruise's character, just to preface this, Tom Cruise's character has an escape place, like a little place that is his
cabin
getaway.
In the woods.
Right. It's his getaway. It's his way to get away from his job and his, you know, the stress of the idea of Earth being done and all of that. He has a little place to get away. And there's a moment that he has in there that you're like, ooh, is the director going to go this direction?
Right.
And he doesn't. He wastes an opportunity.
It turns into every
movie. He wastes an opportunity.
And instead he uses it as a symbol that...
to become the action hero the movie wants him to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, but I mean, he uses it as a symbol for what they usually do at the end of movies when they have to tack on happy endings.
Yeah.
Although, without giving away the ending, this movie, again, makes another cheap choice where it allows you to have a big sacrifice... That then it totally.
Oh, that's the worst.
Totally.
It's
totally
not really
undercut.
A sacrifice.
Here's
totally.
We're gonna put up. If you don't want this movie spoiled, stop listening now because we're about to fuck some shit up.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, that's it. Spoiler domes down. All right. So from the get go, the little piece of art direction.
Mm-hmm.
There's the staircase in the glass cylinder, and the staircase is this perfect double helix.
Right.
Okay. That's the way it exists. I wish now. I am absolutely against this because I do not mess with other people when the movie is going. I'm absolutely against interruption. I mean, against talking. Even if it's a bad film, you at least need to give the film its due. And I don't know that they're not enjoying this film, so I'm against interfering with other people.
That's why it's good that Trey and I sit next to each other because
I agree. But I wish at this point that I had kind of like tapped Trevin and go, hey, when are we going to get clones? I bet these two people are clones. See that? See that big double helix? That huge double helix in that glass cylinder? I bet these two people are clones. And that's exactly what happens. I mean, I don't think it's a huge... I didn't find it surprising.
Now we were talking. Eric and I were
so
talking
where
about
are the clones
this.
Clones in Spider-Man.
Eric and I were talking this at
every
lunch.
But his DNA is altered to make him Spider-Man.
Okay. The movie when it finally decides
it doesn't
to
count, Eric.
Like, what are you talking?
When,
about?
When the movie finally decides just to explicitly through. Reveal that point,
right.
It kind of stumbles over that scene.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
I totally agree that it's mishandled. But there's an ending. You can have Tom Cruise's character sacrifice himself in an explosion.
And then, guess what?
We got another one.
We got another one.
It's okay.
Problem. Yeah.
Yeah. And it would just be a better film if it's like, nope, you sacrificed. You're dead. You're a done deal.
All right. So is it unanimous minors?
Minor rock fist.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is I think if it had a similar soundtrack, like a Daft Punk soundtrack, mm-hmm. like Tron did. I think Tron is stupid, candy-coated fun.
Even if it shits over the original.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Oh, I mean, but it's
the
like,
hallowed original.
But it's,
oh, Tron.
Hey! No, I agree. It's not, it shouldn't be, that is not a sacred cow.
The best
cow
thing
spot.
About Tron Legacy right. was Michael Sheen. Can I just say that?
Whose character makes no sense whatsoever.
I know.
Who would design a computer program to be that?
Yeah, it was awesome.
Wait, which program is he?
He was the big, hammy dude that was dressed like a David Bowie nightmare.
Really? That was him? I thought that was...
Yeah.
He was awesome.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah. Why would you create, like...
But, like, at least it was everything about the layering of the... From the visuals to the soundtrack to everything was really cohesive. This felt less cohesive. So it's not even... To me, it's not even as fun as, like, a Tron.
But you almost get as many shots of mountains and valleys as you do in The Hobbit.
Oh, that's true. Oh, my gosh. This is the longest journey. All right, bye. Minor rock fist down.
Yep.
All
right. We'll see you next week.
Gold dildo.
I knew it was you. Well, Nemesis, gold dildo.
He's just going to riff for an hour.
Are we going?
We're going.
Yeah. Right. Well, before we start today's podcast.
So no intro?
No, I'm trying to.
We're going
to
do Oblivion. And Trey
You're
has
starting?
Trey has a theme song for the movie that we need to introduce it.
Oh, well, no, I want Jamie Lee Curtis to do all of the ads for it, and I want them to use the Activia theme song. I went, Oblivion, because it makes you regular.
It does.
Now, come on, Trevin always goes, hey, folks, happy Friday. I need that.
I've yanked that.
God, bullshit.
It.
No,
Here,
start
I'm doing
over.
It over.
Start
I'm doing
over.
It over. I'm doing it over.